Welcome to Plastics Unwrapped, a series supported by Dow, the materials science company. I'm your host, Maitri Sitharaman. In this podcast, we're on the hunt for solutions to some of the toughest challenges facing the plastics industry. I'll be joined by my producer, Lisa Desai.
Hey, everyone.
She's the woman with all the facts and figures we're going to be talking about. We're going to try and have some seriously honest conversations with guests from across sectors and from across the world. So let's together figure out what it'll really take to save the future of our planet.
The designers are having to learn how you design a product that is bulletproof for the future.
In part two of Design Thinking Plastics for Sustainability, we're delving into the minds of designers and big and small businesses. How are they really rethinking the material itself? Lisa, what kind of picture are the numbers painting?
Well, the numbers are telling us that you really can't start thinking about a life cycle too soon. So up to 80% of a product's lifetime emissions are determined at the onset, and that's by decisions that are made at the design stage. And R&D influences around 80% of that product's footprint. Now, put that into context of the total size of the global plastics market, and it's massive. It's projected to reach around $800 billion by 2030. Now, what that shows us is that design can really influence our climate goals. But we're wasting so much. The Ellen MacArthur Foundation estimates that right now we throw away between 80 and 120 billion tons of plastic every year.
Yeah, it's a waste indeed, because the foundation says it's not that hard to change things. Rethinking product design doesn't even have to be really fundamental. It can be a simple, common sense approach. I mean, designers at Samsung realized that if they redesigned their phone chargers with a matte finish rather than a glossy finish, they wouldn't have to package them with a protective film. Such a simple solution. So joining me to dig a little bit deeper into the corporate psyche when it comes to design are Daniela Souza Miranda. She is the Global Marketing and Circular and Renewable Solutions Business Director at Dow, where she's been for more than 25 years, and Rosalie McMillan. She is the co-founder of circularity-driven, recycled plastic using design and manufacturing house, Smile Plastics. Welcome to the show, Daniela. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Rosalie, welcome to the show as well. So happy to have you on and all the innovations that you're bringing to the table as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about Smile Plastics. Tell us the story about Smile Plastics, because you are iconic in the world of architecture, but a lot of people may not know Smile Plastics per se.
Okay, yeah. So Smart Plastics, we're a material designers and manufacturers based in South Wales. We transform waste plastics into these large-scale decorative panels that get used for all sorts of different applications, but mainly for sort of commercial interiors, retail and hospitality, bathrooms. I mean, the applications are endless. And the panels that we make, they're on a large scale, about 3 meters by 1.2 meters. They're hard and dense and rigid. And I suppose what's special about them, other than that they look really, really beautiful, is that they're both 100% recycled and also 100% recyclable as well.
So that brings me to you, Daniela. I mean, Dow has been literally living on design and innovation for the last 125 years. It seems to define and underscore what is essentially a material sciences company. So tell us how innovation and design are really changing the game for you guys at this point. You know, you've set such high sustainability targets, but at some point you do get flak, and that's understandable. Big companies always do. How is it working within Dow at this point?
One of the things, I mean, we were always designing with the consumer in mind. So the end for us was the experience of the consumer. So making sure that we'll have access to a good shelf life so that the accessibility to different locations and places would be there. Also guaranteeing the attributes that one will expect when they open a package or they make use of some material with plastics. But it was there that our concern in terms of design was stopping until, I would say, a decade ago. So it was the consumer in mind and the design was done for that, but not thinking about the end of life. So I think that was the big game changer for us in the last decade, I would say, pleasing the consumer and delivering a good consumer experience is not enough anymore. I have to, from the start, when I think about the resin that I'm designing, I have to consider what is the end of this life and how do I design this? First, that it's recyclable, and second, that it can incorporate recycled contents.
It's a major change indeed. I mean, for a company like that, I'm guessing it's almost like turning around a 40-ton truck without a handbrake. And that's tough indeed. Rosalie, when you talk to your customers, you don't have a 40-ton truck to turn around. This was the ethos of the company when it started, and it's driving it. What do both of you hear from your customers as the big challenges? And what are the arguments you present to them when you're trying to convince them this is the way to go? Because at the end of the day, you have to serve your customers.
There is such a huge need within the sort of architecture and design community for sustainable materials that don't compromise on aesthetics. You know, things that are really, really beautiful, good attention to detail and craftsmanship that also have the sustainable credentials to back them up. And that's really one of the reasons why we restarted. Obviously, it's not a 40-ton truck to turn around, and we're able to think very carefully right from the start about the way that we want to do business and how we can weave sustainability across all of our operations. And we can do that from the get-go. So that's in terms of all of our sourcing of our different raw materials and making sure that they're as sustainable as possible. But it's also looking at the processing of materials in-house in the production of our panels, in comparison with traditional plastics recycling. We're using about 80% less carbon. And the way that we do that is by, I suppose, treating those plastics with a lot of respect and kind of honouring their first life. And, you know, we've got things like our buyback scheme as well. So once the materials are with our customers at the end of their life, if it's for a short-term event, we want that material back, or it can go through sort of the traditional plastics recyclers as well. So all of those sort of elements together collectively are very important.
Daniela, your customers have made a lot of pledges, and your customers are some of the biggest companies in the world. They've made pledges. What are you doing with them to get them to think about, you know, design and how they use it? Because you mentioned you're trying to simplify your own products. How are they reacting? What are they asking for? Because a lot of them also have not been able to live up to their pledges.
Yeah, no, that has been a challenge for the whole industry. So these discussions are happening day after day because there is a trade-off, there is a compromise there. And you put yourself in the shoes of the brands. I mean, the first one to move has advantages in terms of the cleansing sustainability, but it also may be deselected in the supermarket because we as consumers, we want sustainable, but we also want this beautiful package that fits well there, that has all these beautiful colors and has all the properties we want to see. So it's how you communicate these trade-offs internally and then how you communicate these trade-offs to the consumer. Because as always, in the beginning of a change in a new technology, there are extra costs involved until you get to scale. So I think there is a factor that the first ones to move will be more penalized in terms of the cost that goes across the chain until it gets to a scale that you are able to minimize the cost and get operational efficiency. So it's how you balance this all on the technical side, on the cost side, and at the same time, communicating consumers as you go. That's why this package is a little bit more opaque now, because you're doing this and you are helping reduce plastic waste. So telling the story is as important as moving with the execution of the plan.
Telling the story is important indeed, Rosalie. So how do you tell the story when you talk about panels? Because at some point, you're going to turn around and say, I love my product. But then to the general Joe public, a construction panel or a panel that is part of a house is not exactly sexy. How do you sell that story? Because you've done it very well.
Yeah, I think for us, it's really seeing the opportunity within the plastics itself and really kind of showcasing what the possibilities are and thinking about how to kind of bring that plastic kind of back to life in its best form possible. And so, you know, we have a material called Alba that is made from recycled yogurt pots. And you can see the little bits of the silver foil actually in the material as little flecks. We have a material called Kaleido that's made from cosmetic pots. And again, you can see little bits of text and barcodes in that particular material. So you really kind of get to see the narrative of the material actually sort of embedded within the materials themselves. And they have their own kind of personal identities. And we find that our customers absolutely love that. We're sort of thoroughly wanting to embrace that as a company. And, you know, yes, there are, one person might call an imperfection seeing something like that, whereas others might think that that is actually a really, really big part of it being as wonderful as it is.
And if I can add there, because I think there was a cultural aspect that's super important as well. We have a customer as a big retailer here in the U.S., and in their private label, they are starting to incorporate 50% of PCR, post-consumer recycle, in their bags for underwear garment. And the way they are positioning this is, yes, in their bags, they say, yeah, I look different, and I look different because I'm incorporating 50% of recycled content. Depending on the state in the U.S., it has extremely high acceptance and gets points for the differentiation, or it's completely deselected because people are afraid that because it includes recycled content, it might somehow contaminate their underwear. There's all kind of different perceptions.
So this brings up such an interesting point for me because Rosalie comes from such a design mindset. And Daniela, you have to deal with your industrial designers in the company who are all, you know, being pulled in 100 different directions, profitability, all of this stuff. How do you combine the two? How do you have this internal conversation where you sit down with your designers and say, okay, how do we tell a new story? How do we get people more excited about our designs? Because at some point, it's a business, but you're also selling at some point art.
I think you really start with the destination in mind. And again, you need to be aligned with what the strategy is and where you want to get to win those barriers. It's very easy to stay where you are. I mean, there is a reason where the packages got the complexity that they are today. So it's easy to defend the way we do things today and the system of make, take, and use that was always there. So when you force all of us to think the other way and to think about the circularity instead of the linear economy that we always lead, I mean, there is a trade-off. And on the cost side, because you mentioned the profitability pressure is still the same. I mean, our company, every quarter, we are judged by our shareholders and we publish our results. And based on this, we are a good company, a bad company. I mean, that's the way it is. So you have the short term to deliver at the same time that you're building the company and the industry for the long term. So it's how you do these trade-offs and how you keep evolving in your sustainability strategy at the same time that you are delivering for the present. I really think that the sustainability commitments, the aggressive sustainability commitments that both companies like us and resin producers, but also brand owners, converters are putting in place, they force us to look at something else that's not profitability and to start including in our evaluation of projects and evaluation of products factors that were not there to begin with. So now when we are looking internally in the company in terms of prioritization of resources and how this project compares to that project, we penalize projects that do not have a solution that have a better carbon footprint or projects that are not taking us to a road of circularity and reutilization of resources or utilizing less water or renewable energy as we produce. So it changes the way we are evaluating things internally.
So Daniela, are designers becoming more important at Dow?
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. And the designers are having to learn how you design a product that is bulletproof for the future, that is ready for what's coming in terms of regulation expectation of your consumer.
So Rosalie, if I can ask you this, we're talking about this more esoteric idea of design thinking. When you have to start designing within your company, can you run me through how you think about it? How is design embedded through the start to the very end of your product? I mean, we've kind of given a broad overview. How does your brain work? Because you're the designer here.
Yeah. So I work very closely with my co-founder, Adam Fairweather, who sort of leads the materials development side of things and all of the raw material sourcing. We have big kind of discussions internally about, obviously, that we are restricted to a certain extent with the sorts of plastics that we can work with. So we're focused more exclusively on thermoplastics that you can mold under temperature. But we have them internal conversations about the sorts of plastic kind of profiles that might meet our needs from a design perspective as well. So looking at different colours, the sort of the condition of the plastics, but also their life story. And, you know, there's a big difference in terms of kind of design thinking, depending on the scale that we're really operating at. So yes, design very much at the beginning, the way that we process our materials to honour those materials and get the best out of them. You know, my partner Adam has spent a huge amount of time working on the actual processing, designing the processing of plastics panel manufacture for aesthetics and quality, but also for sustainability purposes. So when we're working with our materials, trying to reduce the amount of offcuts that we have and sort of thinking in designing in a way that really reduces waste. And I think designing in a way, we have some materials that we've manufactured where we're also, yeah, designing for longevity and wanting our materials to actually be enhanced over time, I suppose. You know, sometimes we add various sort of pigments or other things to the materials to make sure that they wear in a really, really lovely way as well. And that's a really, really key part of the design thinking as well, because ultimately you obviously want your materials to last, kind of stand the test of time.
It doesn't work that way for packaging, does it, Daniela? Because at some point with packaging, you want that packaging to land up in Rosalie's hands. Let's just put it that way. So how do we simplify, and what are the innovations happening within the packaging world at this point so that Rosalie, when she picks up some of this packaging for her sheets, she doesn't have to deal with some of the dyes, the toxins that make it impossible to recycle? What are the innovations that you're doing? I know you've got some stuff in the pipeline that have been announced with luxury goods companies that all want to have the sustainability creds. Run us through some of them and what have been the big challenges in getting them to market?
I mean, some of the trends that we see reflected already in packaging first is what we call downgauging, which is less plastic in the package itself. So, and that's an easy one to see when we think about the water bottles of the past and the water bottles of today. So we can easily see that it's less plastics, lightweight. I mean, it's the minimal necessary to meet your needs without any extra resin or extra product that you wouldn't need for the attributes you have. The second one, I would say it's less airspace. I mean, we all went through this experience in the supermarket where we buy the snack bag and when you open, it's almost all air and you just have a little bit of the snacks in the end of the package. So we're seeing this reverse trend now when we discuss with brands, like what is the really minimal size that you need and kind of consolidated products to a level that we see more and more also offers of solids that can be diluted at home, because then you're not paying for the package of something that is 50%, 80% water. Refill is also a trend that we see more and more. I mean, it kind of fights the convenience because you have to pre-plan what you're going to do, when are you going to take your
refilling, and me do not have a good history. Honestly, that is one where I'm kind of like, does that really work? It's one of those convenience things that we all talked about.
I know.
But then you saw it fall down so hard.
There is a convenience battle. But I wanted to answer your question, and sorry, I went a long way on the innovations, because there is some good examples there. And I mean, some of the package that we were able to launch in the last year, one was a big win for us because it's been something we've been trying for many years, which is simplify the package of coffee for a single layer. So today, or in most of the markets, when you look at the coffee package, it looks like it's one layer, but you have the metallic, you have the pasta, you have many different layers to give you this experience when you open a pack of coffee. So we finally launched in mid last year, and it started in Latin America. We have a couple of brands already implemented in Colombia. Now in Brazil, it's coming to US, a package of coffee that's completely 100% polyethylene, so completely recyclable, replacing that metallic layer. Doing the same with chocolate now in Europe. Same mindset. I mean, trying to get rid of the layer of metal, but at the same time, retaining the properties and guaranteeing the same customer experience.
Well, the other example that I didn't realize you guys were doing this, it seems to be that luxury goods with LVMH, you've come up with a completely new resin for this. And how does it help Rosalie? Because Rosalie, you might have some very, very fancy products to add to the panels.
Yeah, now that's a good one, especially because I'm a user of their perfume, so it's close to my heart. So for the taps of the perfume, we were able to replicate. I mean, sometimes you look at the Dior perfumes or some of their brands, and it looks like it's all glass, and the content is glass, but what we made with the caps is all resin. I mean, it's a plastic resin, very, very high performance resin that replicates all the properties of the glass, and you can cut and you can design the way you can see today. And we've implemented the resin solution already for quite some years. The next step that we just did and we announced some weeks ago is those caps now coming from recycled content or biofeedstock. So they are now circular and renewable. So from cap to cap, you can go back to your perfume cap now. Not only it's recyclable, but really recycled with closed-loop programs with LVMH. So that's an evolution of the simplifying the material, finding a good material that gives you the properties you want, and then finding a way to incorporate recycled content or bio-based renewable content into your final formulation.
At some point, it feels like we've gone back to the drawing board when it comes to designing the products that we fell in love with. Rosalie, when you talk to fellow designers, what are they telling you? What are the difficulties in designing for this new world where we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater?
I think we're all a bit confused, to be honest. I think there's a lot of uncertainty and confusion over plastics, obviously mismanagement of plastics ending up in environments that they really shouldn't be ending up in. Obviously, they've got huge longevity. We've been talking about longevity already in this podcast. So if plastic's going to last 500, 1,000 years and they end up in the sea, that causes huge issues. And yes, plastics have developed a really bad reputation because of the mismanagement of them. That's not to say that plastics themselves are a problem. Plastics have got amazing properties that you can't see in other materials. There's a reason why we use them. I think the comparability of different materials is very difficult. We're only just starting to really look at life cycle analyses for different materials. That will enable designers to actually make those materials comparisons that they haven't been able to do up until this point. Because, you know, you offer a glass jar instead of plastics. There are lots of different factors to consider there in terms of transport and breakage, and there's so many of them. And I think it's a very, very challenging area to get your head around. I think it's all about getting the data and then also making that data understandable for everyone so that they can make the right choices.
I think the confusion is not only with the designers. I think there is confusion in the industry. And I think the only way to address it is through data-based discussions. But data, as she properly said, in a way that everybody can understand. Defending a material without taking the responsibility for the end of life of the material is also not the right way to do this. And I think for our industry, it took a while for us to realize that what happens after the consumer uses the package and put in the waste is also our responsibility.
What are you most excited about when it comes to designing for the future at this point? If I can start with you, Daniela.
Yes. Now, I think what I'm most excited is to find the value of waste. That's a completely new space for us, somewhere we've never been. We are a material science company. We are an innovation company. And that has been our objective for the last 125 years. So now looking at waste as the feedstock and the raw material of the future open completely different doors to what the future looks like. So I'm very excited with that.
Rosalie, final word.
I'm enormously excited about designers having access to really beautiful, sustainable materials around them. There's so much innovation going on in materials at the moment to make them more sustainable, both on the plastic side, but also looking at other materials. I think there's a lot of opportunity for the future.
It's exciting times indeed, ladies. Thank you so very much for joining me on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on Design Thinking Plastics for Sustainability. But what do we need to do to make it a reality in the countries on the front line of our waste? In the next episode, we're going to deep dive into our waste problem itself and talk about recycling and beyond.
Waste management is what's known as a wicked problem. There's often no easy answer, and you have to go slowly and carefully if you want to look after people at the same time as sorting the waste management situation out.
Thanks for sticking with us to the end as we hunt for solutions to make plastics truly circular. This podcast is supported by Dow, the material science company. Don't forget to share the show if you enjoyed it. Do leave us a comment or a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.